Agriculture in our region is very different from a couple of decades ago. Hillsides once marked by rows of pear trees are often home to grapevines now, growing grapes for wine. And then there's the other transition to marijuana now that it's legal for personal use in both our states. Even before legalization, people who lived near places where cannabis grew often complained about odors and other issues. Now that it's a cash crop out in the open, more issues come to the fore. And the wine industry in particular is casting a wary eye on farms that grow marijuana, especially when they're right next door to the grapes. We have three guests in the studio with us. Catherine Bryant is with Deer Creek Vineyards and Bryant Family Farm in the Illinois Valley, and so is actually familiar with both sides. We'll get to that in a moment. Thank you for joining us, Catherine.
Thank you.
Mark Wisnowski is with us as well. He's with Valley View Winery in Rouche, and just to reveal a couple of seconds ago, he's also growing some CBD hemp. Thank you for joining us, Mark.
Thank you, Jeff.
Maureen Battistella is back with us as well, too. She's the architect of the Southern Oregon University Wine of Southern Oregon collection and a bit of a local historian as well, and always helpful on ventures like this, particularly in agriculture. Maureen, thanks for joining us once again.
It's fun to be here.
And you're staying away from the microphone because you don't want to be talked to, right? let's start with Maureen, in fact, because you wrote this up recently in the Oregon Wine Press. I mean, there are startling figures in there about how much agricultural land there is in Southern Oregon generally as a portion of the state, but how much of that is in wine, grapes, and cannabis.
That's correct. And that particular fact is kind of what drew me to the article, in addition to talking with wine growers throughout the region about the impact and intersection of the two agricultural crops. But I was interested to learn that it's about 2.4% Southern Oregon, using the definition of the Southern Oregon AVA, Douglas, Jackson, and Josephine County.
That's the viticultural area?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the Southern Oregon AVA primarily. Those three counties account for about 2.5% of the state's harvested agricultural acres. So it's a very small percentage of agricultural land in the state. But when I looked at the crops that were actually growing and how much of those agricultural acres, both in terms of the state's production as also Southern Oregon's production, was used by cannabis and grapes, I was amazed. So somebody kind of asked, how many acres do we have planted to grapes? How many acres do we have planted to cannabis? And what I learned when I started looking at the data for medical, recreational, and industrial hemp, not knowing actually for illegal grows, I found that about 5.3% of Southern Oregon's acreage was dedicated to cannabis and 35% of Southern Oregon's acreage was dedicated to wine. Now, of that, really, it's about 25% of the total state's production. So we have a very small agricultural footprint here in Southern Oregon, but of that agricultural production, more than half of it is dedicated to only those two crops.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. Bunch.
Okay. So let's talk to the folks in the wine business here then, and I'll start with Catherine Bryan at Deer Creek Vineyard. So obviously in the wine business for a lot longer than the cannabis business.
Correct. We've had the vineyard for almost 8 years. The vineyard was an established vineyard. It's roughly 30 years old. The cannabis business, we just received our rec permit at the end of October.
So a very recent development. So you
Correct.
Haven't even really planted yet.
We have what I would call veggies. Mm-hmm. Those are plants without flower.
Okay. So, yeah. but very early in the growing process.
Correct.
It sounds like.
Correct.
So just from your own perspective as somebody who bought a vineyard, though, I mean, were there concerns as somebody who was in the wine business about what neighboring grows of cannabis might do to your crops?
No. You know, I think that, you know, there's a lot of stories out there about how cannabis affects grapes. I think that's a bunch of baloney. There's no such thing as smell particles affecting grapes. In the Illinois Valley, you're going to find there's probably a lot more cannabis being grown probably than a lot of the other regions which surround vineyards. And, you know, we've had various grow sites around us, and not once have we had a problem with our grapes. As a matter of fact, a few years ago, we leased some land out to a medical grower, and you know, he had a few plants, and that year we produced Pinot Gris, 92 points. It was the highest rated Pinot Gris in the state for a while. So maybe they should plant.
So you're saying I mean, and how close was the cannabis to the grapes that went
know,
into the Pinot
maybe,
Gris?
500 feet.
Mm-hmm.
1,000 feet? I don't know exactly.
So were you ever concerned? I mean, because there's been so much discussion about what might happen here. And I wonder if it ever got to the point of any level of concern for you or just thought, no, we're just going to do this.
No, I really don't believe. And we talked to some science-based people and some viticulturists and talked to a few other people. And it was like, no, there's nothing. There's nothing to that. And obviously, you know, we've got some years behind us now, and we have some good quality grapes and some awesome wine. So, you know, obviously it's not affecting us. I think a lot of why people have attitudes about the cannabis within the wine industry is primarily based out of fear. You know, lack of information, lack of knowledge, lack of reaching out to their neighbors and talking to them and really trying to find out what's going on? You know, what are they doing? What are they planning? How's that going to impact us? What can I do to help you? You know, and I don't think that some of the issues that, you know, people are complaining about as far as cannabis, there's some legitimate issues with respect to water and how people are treating the land. And, you know, but you have bad apples in any industry. You know, I mean, I can think of a handful of people in the wine industry that, you know, could learn a few good things from cannabis growers about being stewards of the land and being good neighbors. I mean, I've heard of, you know, people in the wine industry that go and chop their neighbors' trees down and plant grapevines under power lines and, you know, all kinds of wonderful things. But, you know, it's just a matter of perspective. It depends on how you want to look at it.
So you could be good or bad steward no matter what you're growing out there.
Exactly.
Mark Wisnowski at Valley View Winery. Let's talk about your own experiences. Were there ever concerns at Valley View about cannabis, particularly and if you're in Rouche, then you probably have a fair amount of cannabis around you.
We certainly do. I don't think you can turn more than a couple degrees without seeing a new grow or a greenhouse or somebody planting. With us being in the middle of the Applegate Valley, which I sort of say is the epicenter of cannabis, certainly in Oregon, I think it's the best place to grow cannabis in the U.S. You know, we started 45 years ago. We were the first first commercial winery since Prohibition. We weren't the first agriculture in the Applegate. So as most people realize, cannabis was there before wine grapes. And I am, you know, at my heart, a farmer, and also, like Catherine mentioned, I'm sort of a science-based person, so I don't do too well with anecdotal evidence. I want to see actual evidence, and the fact is we grew about 24,000 hemp plants this year, which for all practical purposes is marijuana without the THC, and we were only about 40 feet from our vineyard at its closest point, and it certainly, you know, emits an odor. We have yet to see any effect on any of the wines that we harvested from that close proximity. So, and I agree with Catherine, the science part of it has yet to show that there's a direct link. And I'm pro-agriculture, and I've been in the Applegate long enough to see that it is an expensive place to live. There are certainly a lot of people that like to move out in the Applegate because it's such a beautiful place. So property and home sites are very expensive, and yet it's, like most of Southern Oregon, it's a very unaffordable place to live because of incomes. So to see this industry come in and to see people now being able to work the land, especially young people, and be able to do it responsibly as opposed to so many of the other impacts that you see on lands, I'm really encouraged. And like Catherine said, of course, when you have such a large industry, such a large, quickly growing, impact on the land, you're going to have a certain amount of conflict. That occurs with anything. I mean, I grew up with log trucks just rambling down the road one after the other and all the impacts that had. And yet, you didn't really hear a lot of people talking about the impacts of clear cutting and logging because we all saw what it meant with the mills and the
employment. People are making money.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And yet there seems to be a real disconnect here with all those same people that are so pro-economic development and pro jobs and family wages, and yet they just don't seem to be behind this as much as they would, ironically, if it was logging.
wine and cannabis coexisting, the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. Mark Wisnowski is with Valley View Winery in Rouche. Catherine Bryan is with Deer Creek Vineyards and Bryan Family Farm. And Maureen Battistella is a historian who is also keeping track of agricultural efforts going on in Southern Oregon, particularly in the wine industry. You can join the conversation on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So I want to talk about the two of you branching out from your wine businesses into cannabis businesses. And why don't we start with Catherine, because this is a Bryan Family Farm is a separate venture from Deer Creek Vineyards with your son, is that right?
Yes, it is. And it's on a separate piece of property. I have to clarify that all the time because under, you know, having a winery permit and growing grapes and producing wine, we're under federal regulations, so we have to adhere to those laws. So it's a separate piece of property, and I am doing it in partnership with my son.
So give us an idea, though, of what it's like to work in the two businesses, because particularly with the continued federal prohibition on cannabis,
right.
the difference in the rules and regulations and the threat of any potential federal crackdown and the banking and all the other things that come with the cannabis biz.
Yeah, you know, the unfortunate thing, and I hope this changes for cannabis, is the banking and also taxes. So, for example, for cannabis, when you file your taxes, we're not going to get the same benefits that the wine industry enjoys with being able to, you know, have certain tax write-offs. You, for example, in cannabis, you can't claim labor for sales and marketing because they consider that as trafficking. So that's a big difference right there. Where there is a lot of similarities is really in the farming and permaculture type of aspects. I think that the cannabis industry in some ways is further along in understanding and applying some farming techniques that are very beneficial, primarily in permaculture, dealing with microbes. I think it's very interesting the parallels that you have with the sales and the marketing part of the cannabis. You know, the cannabis is just kind of coming into its own. And you hear a lot of, you know, what's going on in the market and how that, I mean, it's the same thing happens in the wine industry. You have the same diseases and issues, you know, powdery mildew, and you have to deal with botrytis. And
crops are crops. Stuff
yeah,
is going to happen.
Yeah, crops
out there,
are huh? crops, you know. The difference, of course, is you're going to have, you're going to make more money, ideally, from cannabis than you will with grapes. And, you know, that's going to change, too, depending on how flooded the markets are. And
well, how big a concern is that? I mean, given that you look at all the acreage and all the greenhouses and all the fences going up in the region,
yeah,
I wonder if there's anywhere near the demand that there is for all the supply.
Well, I think that that's going to get – things will kind of reach an equilibrium at some point, you know, and the prices will adjust and come to some point where, you know, it's going to weed out a lot of the people that are not business people. You know, I don't really care what it is, whether it's cannabis or grapes, it's a commodity in my opinion. And if you don't know how to run a business, it's not going to matter. You could be same thing with wine. You could produce the best quality wine, but if you don't know how to sell it and you don't know how to market it and you know how to run a business and keep your margins down, you're going to go out of business. So,
Mark Wisnowski, I want to get into your head here a little bit because your operation is not about cannabis for consumption in the usual sense. You're doing a CBD hemp operation,
right? Right. And like Catherine, we are also growing it on separately owned land and separate organization as well.
But not for biological reasons, just for business reasons.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We're growing CBD hemp, which is being used primarily. There are people that are using it for flower, as you would use cannabis or THC or marijuana, but for the most part, they are extracting the CBD oil out of it, and it is really showing incredible medical benefits.
Cannabidiol, is that what it is?
It's CBD.
All right.
But it is not
THC, which is the thing that gets you high.
Correct.
But it does have some curative, or at least some healthful properties of its own.
Right, right. Especially in the anti-seizure area. And considering that, again, it's considered cannabis. So for all practical purposes, according to the federal government, it is a Schedule I drug. However, they are sort of, you know, I guess to a certain extent, allowing the states to license it. Now, we are licensed differently than Catherine, or differently from the THC-containing cannabis. So we are licensed and regulated by the Oregon Department of Agriculture. So we have a special permit. We also have to be tested and have less than 0.3% THC within 28 days of harvest, and which we passed. So that's a rule that sort of Europe came up with a couple years ago as 0.3, which is somewhat of an arbitrary number. But for the most part, the United States has adopted that. And the states that do choose to grow industrial hemp, which was allowed under the 2014 Farm Bill.
So is it just for CBD, or are you using it for fiber as well?
It's primarily for CBD, because these plants, since they're bred to have high CBD, are essentially coming from the marijuana strains, and they're taking out the THC, as opposed to the strains of cannabis that were grown more for the actual fiber and seed, and which are grown a little bit more like corn, which is
more
done
stocky,
more,
yeah.
Right, and that's done more in places like Kentucky, which is actually sort of the epicenter of the fiber industry, which is why Mitch McConnell was the one who put it into the Farm Bill in 2014 and allowed these state-run industrial hemp programs to exist.
We are talking about cannabis and wine and the coexistence of those industries in Southern Oregon with Mark Wisnowski from Valley View Winery, Catherine Bryan from Deer Creek Vineyards and Bryan Family Farm, and historian, writer Maureen Battistella. You can join the discussion on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You know, I was asking a moment ago about the potential for the market to get flooded. I do wonder about market saturation with wine, though, because it seems like just about any place where there used to be pear trees, and granted, there are lots left still, but lots of acres still in pears, but lots of places that have switched over to wine grapes over the years. Are either of you two on the wine side of the ledger concerned about the market getting saturated? Catherine?
No, because the thing with wine that's different from cannabis is cannabis, we have a license to sell within Oregon only. Wine, you can sell anywhere. And hopefully that's going to change on the cannabis side. And I've heard through the grapevine that that's something that they're actually looking at, is how they can actually cross state lines legally within the states that are legal to be able to sell your cannabis. But that in itself is huge for the wine industry, is that you can sell wine anywhere. You know, here we're limited to selling cannabis here in Oregon. I don't know if hemp can be sold elsewhere. But
what is the story with hemp?
That's a very good question, Jeffrey.
Yeah, really.
For the most part, we're talking about a lot of gray areas. And again, hemp and marijuana are both gray areas when it comes to leaving the state in which you are licensed or allowed to do that.
So why did you choose to go with CBD hemp rather than with the straight cannabis THC stuff?
Well, I have a little different take of Catherine. I believe we are pretty heavily overplanted in Southern Oregon with wine grapes. I don't know whether I'm necessarily worried about it, but the fact is that there are more grapes and producing more wine than we're consuming, in a sense. Yes, we can send it out of the area, but you know, we've been trying that for an awful long time. And demand for Southern Oregon wines is not really that great outside of Southern Oregon. The margins really, really start to drop. But in terms of being able to ship it out of state, we're dealing with that right now, as we have flour and soon we'll have oil that we're looking to sell. And we're getting all kinds of different answers from various people. It technically should be legal, but the feds still have their finger on it, so that you know if push comes to shove and the feds get involved, the DEA still apparently can say that's cannabis and that's a Schedule I drug.
Are you concerned at all about the effect of one product on the other? I did notice this piece in the Washington Post from December 1st about marijuana taking a bite out of alcohol sales. Any concerns there? For this would really come more to you, Catherine.
I don't think so. I mean, I've noticed in the last couple of years, what I've noticed is the traffic in our tasting room. actually has increased, and I have a little different demographic for buying wines. And I'm not sure if that's related to the fact that I'm in the Illinois Valley, or we're in Southern Oregon, and if that would be different if I was in a different state. But I have an awful lot of growers and cannabis-focused people that come in and buy wine, and they don't have a problem spending money. So, yeah, I see that as a benefit.
Before we go, I wanted to ask Maureen Battistella. Apparently, there have been some face-to-face meetings, like one advocated by the Rogue Valley Food Network that got the marijuana growers and the winemakers together. Is that right?
Yes, it wasn't specifically for cannabis and wine. It was more to look at food supply in Southern Oregon so that a variety of issues were addressed by the Rogue Valley Food Systems Network in their meeting this fall. They looked at labor issues, water supplies and irrigation. They looked at land use and sustainability of agricultural practices among all groups. They also looked at it was very revealing to see how similar the problems were among all farmers, how all farmers were concerned about loss of water rights because of how cannabis growers were using a small portion, really, of properties that they were buying. Mm-hmm. So a good portion of the properties that the cannabis growers were not using would suffer compaction, suffer loss of fertilization and other inputs, and also loss of water rights because of non-use.
Okay. All kinds of issues still left to work out in several branches of agriculture, particularly in the cannabis business as it grows in the region. Maureen Battistella is a historian and writer, architect of the Wine of Southern Oregon Collection at Southern Oregon University. Catherine Bryan, Deer Creek Vineyards and Bryan Family Farm. Mark Wisnowski at Valley View Winery. Thank you all for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff.